Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see.
Produced
somebody.
At the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal legal system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. Established in 1975, Youth Rights and Justice is Oregon's leading nonprofit law firm dedicated exclusively to children and families. To learn more about Youth Rights and Justice, I spoke recently with one of their staff attorneys, Seth Lichtenstein Hill. Here's that conversation.
Thank you. My name is Seth Lichtenstein Hill. I'm a staff attorney with Youth Rights and Justice. I'm an education attorney with the Youth Educational Supports Program. I've been with Youth Rights and Justice for a little over 3 years now.
Very cool. Now, tell me about Youth Rights and Justice. What kind of it's a nonprofit. You do legal work. Tell me about Youth Rights Justice.
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit public defense law firm that focuses on juvenile dependency and delinquency cases, particularly, meaning that we receive court appointments for kids who are facing delinquency charges, or children or parents and families who come into the dependency system.
You know, I want to talk to you about Youth Rights Justice all the way through, but you're also a public defense firm. And I need to just for context, generally the state is in a public defense crisis because too many cases and too few folks like you doing this hard work. I know that's so for the adult system. Is that also the case in the juvenile system?
I don't think to the extent that it is in the adult system. In fact, I think that they're trying to take steps to sort of force us out of providing legal representation in juvenile delinquency cases so that we would take jobs in adult cases to sort of shore up, you know, the crisis, which is fallacy, but...
And then kids just get into more trouble so that when they become adults, they're going to need the services of public defenders even more. Oh, dear Lord.
Well, it actually is a little bit different. What they're trying to do, or what the conversation is, well, if we can find ways to sort of scale back the need for public defenders to represent youth or families in the dependency or delinquency systems, we'll need less lawyers in those systems, and those lawyers, because they're public defenders by nature, will move over to the adult system, seeing such a high need there. But that's, I mean, like I said, it's a fallacy, because that's probably not what would happen. They would probably turn to something else or move, or because I mean, people that get into this area of law do it out of passion for this area, for helping vulnerable children, for helping justice impacted children and families.
So you say, we were speaking earlier, this is it's an area of the legal system. I'm not going to call it the justice system anymore. It's an area of the legal system that I hadn't given a lot of thought of until the last few years, and I have been thinking a lot more about. Now tell me more about Youth Rights and Justice. How does it's a public defense firm? How do you get involved? What happens? What's the process like?
As far as how one becomes represented by Youth Rights and Justice?
You're going to point what happens? I mean, what is the yeah? I don't I
sure. Sure. So like with the delinquency system, right, a youth commits acts that if they were an adult would be treated as criminal acts. And the county then will file petition or charges against that youth, and the youth will come before the court. And if the youth or family cannot afford an attorney, then they get an attorney appointed for them, similar to the adult system. And along with the other public defense organizations in the area, we are sort of in that pool of attorneys that then will get appointed to that youth. Similarly, in the dependency system, say a child comes into care, foster care, because of abuse or neglect, DHS files a petition with the court to begin a court case. And those families, both the parents and the children involved, need attorneys. And so then they'll get appointed attorneys from that pool of defense firms.
And then you're there to basically to advocate for the kid.
Correct.
Now, and also, I know that the legal system in Oregon has what I would call kids going into adult court. What are the ages like in terms of youth, what we call youthful, the youth juvenile court?
So for delinquency, I think the youngest the charges can be brought is 12 years old, my understanding in Oregon, and up, and then they could be under the Oregon Youth Authority or local sort of probation or parole up until, I believe, 25. And then as far as the dependency system goes, that's any age of a kid from 0 to 18 who experiences abuse or neglect.
Right on. And you folks, now, can you folks help with emancipation? Because, I mean, kids,
yeah, I mean,
it's not a kid's fault whose parents the parents ended up with, you know?
Yeah, that's certainly a topic that we deal with for children that we represent and can be involved in those proceedings. As an educator, so I should sort of back up. On top of the public defense work that we do, we've been around long enough, 50 years now, that we've, over the years, identified other areas in which we can help support these children and families that were very much at the forefront of our minds as we work through these cases. So one thing we did was recognize that children in the dependency and delinquency systems have a higher rate of special education needs, as well as just general education support, because that was very much lacking amongst this population of kids, of students. And so we created the SchoolWorks program. And that provides an education attorney for our clients in-house that need them. So over the years, we've developed these other programs that are sort of ancillary to our work, but very much a part of it, right? It's sort of like the holistic view of how we can best help these families and these children to make sure that they're given the best opportunity moving forward to, you know, succeed and overcome all the challenges, all the trauma that they've experienced in their lifetime.
That is tremendous. I wanted to ask you about SchoolWorks, because I think that it's looking over your website, you do a lot of really great work. Just tell me more about SchoolWorks, because I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, so it like kind of what I said, it provide we have there's a group of attorneys that are specialized in education law, very niche area of law that a lot of people don't really realize is very important for students' success in their education. And like I said, like a lot of our clients receive special education services or are in need of alternative school placements or are routinely pushed out of their schools because of, you know, behaviors stemming from trauma, from mental health, from what's going on at home, or, you know, experiencing housing instability or food insecurity. You know, they're already put at a severe disadvantage within the education system. And so in recognizing that, we wanted to make sure that we were able to protect their rights as far as, you know, as far as their ability to access their education, continue in their education, getting the supports that the law requires them to have within their educational setting. And so they developed this program in order to be able to do that, in order to be able to at least help, you know, the clients within our office that absolutely needed that.
There were a few different things that your Youth Rights and Justice, like I said, your website, there was, it's a bit odd, I know, a little silly, but you also have an expunction clinic, the word processor didn't even understand that one, but basically, people shouldn't have to wear a scarlet letter for something they did when they were 14 or 15 years old. Tell me about this expunction clinic.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not the expert on this. I wish my colleague was here who does do this work. But so Oregon has some expunction laws, or had some expunction laws on the books that, I mean, the way it was explained to me, were essentially like not really being used. And there was a lot of barriers for youth and adults seeking expunction to get their records wiped clean. And when I say records, I don't just mean adjudications. I don't just mean when, you know, they're made delinquents of the court, right? When they are ordered into Oregon Youth Authority custody, or they can get placed on probation and found to have committed the acts that they were charged with, right? Previously, it was like, if you had contacts with law enforcement, that would be part of your record. That would go in on your record. So like, you know, you get pulled over as a child, you know, before you're 18, like all this stuff would be part of your permanent criminal record, which then would stay with you into adulthood, obviously impact your ability to get a job, and all kinds of things that you don't even think about. This obviously impacted a lot of our clients. And it was a sort of a system that, to my understanding, was, like I said, not easily accessible, hard to understand, hard to navigate. And so it was often not generally utilized, or, you know, you'd really have to like be resourceful to like understand the qualifications, then seek the, you know, file a petition with the court, go in most of the time like unrepresented, because who's going to pay an attorney, you know, all that money to help them do this, or even have that type of money. And so we created the expunction clinic to, you know, help people navigate this system. Along with that, we've been able to lobby the legislature to over time change these laws to open up the process to more people, to include more records that could be expunged, that were eligible for expunction, past adjudications, like the types of adjudications that could qualify for expunction. We try to like open that up to really do our best to like make it more possible for more previous delinquent youth to, you know, seek expunction and successfully get that expunged. I just received an email recently from the colleague that I was talking about how the amount of expunctions that has taken place over the last few years since we've sort of been able to change some of these requirements and laws, how it's like the amount of expunctions has exploded by like thousands percent. I mean, it's like gone from like, you know, a couple hundred cases to now like thousands of cases. We've really seen a lot of success with our efforts at expunction, which has been really great to see.
See, that's, let's say kids 12, 13 years old don't have to wear that scarlet letter for the rest of your life. That's just, oh.
Well, and I mean, and if you think about it, it's like, I mean, these are kids, first and foremost, talking about kids, whose brains are, you know, still developing, like I said, experiencing probably a lot of trauma, a lot of instability in their lives at times. But But who then are, you know, if they're adjudicated and they move on, and they, and part of the expunction process, like, you have to have been successful in your rehabilitation, right? So it's like they go through all of this, they do everything that is asked of them, they move past, they try and move past it after doing everything the state told them that they needed to do, and then it blocks them from, you know, fulfilling their goals in their careers because of what happened in their past. So yeah, you're absolutely right. That there's really, it just doesn't make any sense that they would have to carry that burden and that, like you say, scarlet letter for the rest of their lives.
This is my conversation with Seth Lichtenstein Hill, a staff attorney at Youth Rights and Justice, a nonprofit Oregon law firm dedicated exclusively to children and families. We'll hear the rest in a moment. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, you do Youth Rights and Justice does system reform through advocacy at the legislature and through litigation in court. And, you know, making sure these laws are actually implemented is certainly a kind of, is certainly that kind of system reform. What else are you working on? The legislature's in session. Do you know if you're down there at the legislature this session? Is there anything? Are there any cases working through the court that you can discuss? Yeah. What can you tell me about the system reform through advocacy and litigation?
Well, so we do have a legislative committee in our office that tracks any legislation coming through that we feel like may impact our clients. I don't really want to speak specifically to that other than to say, you know, we are looking at ways in which we can improve the expunction system, looking at ways we can improve the overall dependency and delinquency systems as a whole in relation to how it affects our clients. Opposing bills that would adversely affect our clients, obviously, and supporting bills that help our clients. Particularly for me, I have been working with youth who are transitioning out of Oregon corrections, youth corrections, and programs, and helping them reestablish themselves within their community, specifically around their education. It was sort of like an offshoot of SchoolWorks. About three and a half years ago, a federal grant became available to us that was focused on this population of students, particularly recognizing that, you know, youth coming out of youth corrections facilities and programs were not well supported. They did not have a lot of advocacy in their education placements. They were routinely falling through the cracks, or being pushed out of their community schools because of the stigma that they carry with being an adjudicated youth, with being a justice impacted youth. And so we created this program to provide an attorney for them and a social worker to them. And the attorney focusing really on that education piece, ensuring that, you know, their special education rights are being upheld, ensuring that they're not being pushed out of their schools, ensuring that, you know, the school districts are finding appropriate placements for them, that their transcripts are being updated in a timely fashion, and records are being marshaled so that records aren't falling through the cracks or being neglected altogether. And then the social work piece, sort of expanding those efforts to help, I mean, we've helped students and kids facing houselessness and food insecurity obtain housing. I mean, a lot of our clients may not have parents, supportive parents, or maybe just don't have, the parents aren't in the picture. And so like their whole support group is their parole officer and maybe a mentor that they got connected to. So now they have a social worker who can help them apply for food stamps. If they want to go to college, help them apply for FAFSA. Get housing vouchers through Section 8 or any other program available. I'm really just trying to connect them with whatever community resources they can. And he's been invaluable to that effort. So that's specifically what I focus on within the office, is this youth educational supports program. We're no longer funded by the federal government, kind of thankfully, because of what's going on with the federal government in grant funding right now. That being said, I mean, there is still the need for that funding within our office, because that was a huge hit when they didn't renew our grant, and they didn't renew any of the grants. So it wasn't like ours wasn't ineffective or anything like that. It was just the way the grant process worked on the federal level.
This is something I run into all the time. In other roles, I look at the criminal legal system and the research. It's really fascinating. There are some tremendous pilot programs that get done around the country. Some amazing stuff. Some great, really innovative stuff. Pilot programs funded, great price, really wonderful results. And then the funding runs out and it closes down. And, well, that was interesting. And we can publish the paper. But, you know, it's like, oh, for God's sake, what about... Huh? And making the funding, you know, it's... Keep kids, as opposed to letting them become adult, you know, become adult offenders, for heaven's sake.
And I think, and that's a big reason why we continued the program. I mean, it could have very easily just died with the funding, but our office and our board saw the amazing work that we were doing, and obviously, not to toot my own horn, but you know, that they saw the importance of this program and the work that we were doing, and the impact that it was having on the youth that we were working with. And they felt that it was a priority to continue that. And our hope is that, you know, with some time, that we can find some funding sources to make this a permanent program, recognizing that it's absolutely needed. I've been going to conferences over the last couple of years and talking with other attorneys and advocates around the country who do similar work. And it's really not out there. I mean, but the programs that are out there that do this are really successful. And because there's an obvious need. It doesn't take a lot to recognize that when you sort of start to think about what these young people are facing when they're coming out of these facilities and programs.
I mean, some of the stuff is plain as the nose on your face, but nobody, you know, it's just a question of doing something. Bless you for doing something. Thank you. Now, let's see. We're getting close to the end of the half hour. I need to find out what all. How can people find out more about youth rights and justice, and keep up with the work you're doing and all that kind of stuff? How can people find out more about the work you're doing and all that, you know, the website, things like that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, our website has all of this information, as well as like links to all our social media websites. The website is youthrightsjustice.org. Super simple. That would be the best place to go. The, you know, and all the links to sort of get in contact with us, get on our mailing lists. We have a regular newsletter and blog. So yeah, that would be the best way to do that. We also have a 50th anniversary kickoff happening February 13th at 5 p.m. It's at the Northwest Natural Building, which is 250 West Taylor Street in Portland. It's a free happy hour event. Learn more about our programs. I'll probably be there talking about my program. So I would check that out too.
Oh, very cool. Because it's your 50th anniversary. Right. Oh, very cool. And people can find out more from your website at Youth Rights Justice.
Wow. YouthRightsJustice.org.
Again, folks, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, and my guest is Seth Lichtenstein Hill, a staff attorney at Youth Rights and Justice, a nonprofit public defense firm here in Portland, Oregon. Seth, do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners?
So, I mean, if you're listening to this program, then obviously you understand the importance of our work. You also probably understand that this is not a well-funded area of work, that we need all the help we can get financially and just, you know, legislatively, regularly from any form that helps. And you understand that this is important work, because at the level in which we get involved with these people's lives, is critical, right, to transforming them as they move forward, whether it's ensuring that they do not fall into the school to prison pipeline, that they have every opportunity to show that they can make changes in their life and be better so that they don't go on to then reoffend as adults, and that they don't fall through the cracks systemically, you know, whether it's their education, the criminal justice system, or any of the other systems that are inevitably probably going to impact them as they try and move on and become adults, you know, become productive citizens in our communities. And instead of ignoring the problem or saying, you know, just put them in jail, put them in correctional facilities and forget about it, why don't we help them make better choices, give them the opportunities that are available to them to actually make the changes that they would want to make in order to be better humans, be better members of our community.
Seth, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
That was my conversation with Seth Lichtenstein-Hill, a staff attorney at Youth Rights and Justice, a nonprofit Oregon law firm dedicated exclusively to children and families. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Many thanks to my guest, Seth Lichtenstein-Hill, and the organization Youth Rights and Justice as it celebrates its 50th anniversary. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it, and you make it possible. Prison Pipeline is a volunteer production for Community Radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please, support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like and share it with friends. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long.